I enjoyed it. I hope you did as well. And you will consider staying with us and keeping us on the air. Right now it's 7 a.m. in New York, and coming up next is What's Going On with Keziah Glow. Please stay tuned.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. Don't punish me, sister, with brutality. Sister, talk to me, sister, so you can see.
Good morning, New York and New Jersey, as well as the great world beyond. This is Keziah Glow. This is the Tuesday edition of What's Going On, the Peace and Labor Report. Michael G. Haskins is our audio engineer, and Bob Hennelly is our executive producer. It is July 23rd, 2024. Sunrise was at 5:45 a.m. and sunset will be at 8:20 p.m. It's 72 degrees under cloudy skies, and it's raining in the NYC area. It's headed up to 84 degrees by later this afternoon. You can expect scattered showers tomorrow and Thursday with temperatures in the low 80s. Friday through the weekend, it clears up with the sun returning with temperatures getting into the 80s. Rain is not expected again until the middle of next week. So that sounds pretty good. All right. So this morning, what do we have? We are going to continue our coverage of the ongoing crisis inside the health and hospitals, New York City's municipal hospital system. So now just keep in mind, this is the largest system in the nation. H&H serves everyone regardless of their insurance, immigration status. It's like universal municipal health care. So for months now, the Doctors Council, SEIU, has been warning the Adams administration that the city's municipal hospitals and clinic network are facing a staffing crisis. And that was degrading patient care. Now, we are all affected by that. Anyone who has to get health care in New York City, if you have to go to the hospital, this is important. The doctor's council's contract lapsed last year. And what the city has been offering continues to fall far short of what's needed to ensure sufficient staffing in terms of retention. That's holding on to the doctors they have and recruiting new doctors to fill existing spots. This staffing meltdown is happening as the city is seeing a 20% spike in emergency room visits and admissions. Now, think about it. Any one of us could be one of those emergency room spikes because we never know when something is going to happen. Today, we are going to speak to OBGYN Dr. Ijan Turkman with the Doctors Council SEIU. In the second half of the show, we will get an update on a proposed power plant that the Passaic Valley Sewage Commission wants to build in the Ironbound section of Newark, a community that's already home to multiple pollution producing power plants. Now, if you've ever driven on the turnpike or on the I-95, when you get to that region, you can actually smell that area. The public health experts warn Ironbound residents already experience high level of pollution from numerous sources, including an incinerator, power plants, heavy industry, Newark Airport, truck and train traffic, and major highways. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into that a little later. We will get the latest from Maria Lopez, Deputy Director for Organizing and Advocacy for Newark's Ironbound Community Corporation. All that, and we want you to call in. I would love to hear what you have to say. I want you to give your, allow your voice to be heard. I want you to call in. The number is 212-209-2877. Last week, we had some really passionate callers. I just want to remind you, the language is very, very important that we use when we call in. Keep that in mind. I know that you are very, very passionate. But first, we are going to go to Washington for the Pacific News Network news.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Joe Biden's legacy of accomplishment over the past 3 years is unmatched in modern history. In one term, he has already, yes, you may clap.
Vice President Kamala Harris says President Joe Biden has accomplished more in one term than other presidents have in two. In her first appearance since Biden ended his re-election campaign, Harris touted Biden's character and said he's looking forward to being back on the road following his recovery from COVID. Democrats are consolidating behind Harris, including a majority of lawmakers. Former Speaker Nancy Pelosi signed on, calling Harris brilliantly astute. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries also offered praise, but stopped short of an endorsement.
Vice President Kamala Harris has excited the community. She's excited the House Democratic Caucus, and she's exciting the country.
The change has also reignited fundraising. The Harris campaign and allied groups say they've raised around $250 million since Biden bowed out. Legally, no candidate is nominated until delegates to the convention vote. Harris says she plans to earn and win that nomination, and so far, 1,000 delegates have told the AP they plan to support her. It's unclear if she'll face any challengers next month in Chicago, but many of her potential rivals are endorsing her. Republicans are threatening legal action. House Speaker Mike Johnson says the more than 14 million voters who backed Biden in the primaries should not be disenfranchised.
It would be wrong and I think unlawful in accordance to some of these states' rules for a handful of people to go in a back room and switch it out because they don't like the candidate any longer.
Republicans are also calling on Biden to resign, saying if he's not fit to run, he's not fit to serve. Former President Donald Trump has kept up attacks on social media, claiming without proof that Biden's advisors hid the truth about his health and calling his COVID diagnosis a fake excuse to drop out. Meanwhile, lawmakers in both parties have called on Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle to resign after the Trump assassination attempt. At a contentious hours-long hearing, Cheadle agreed the event was a colossal failure, but repeatedly cited a continuing investigation when asked for details. South Carolina Republican Nancy Mace accused Cheadle of lying.
These are important questions that the American people want answers to, and you're just dodging and talking around it in generalities.
New Mexico Democratic Congresswoman Melanie Stansberry says she's not surprised at the bipartisan frustration with the agency.
This is not just a single shooting. This is about national security and the security of our democracy.
Cheadle promised lawmakers a report on the agency's handling of the event in 60 days, but several lawmakers called that unacceptable. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
All right. Thank you, Catherine. Okay, so we have Doctors Council, SEIU, Dr. Ijan Turkman, OBGYN, physician at H&H South Brooklyn Health, formerly Coney Island Hospital. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, good morning. How are you? Thank you so much for having me here.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much. And first, I just want to let everyone know, the number is 212-209-2877. If you are a nurse, a doctor, a patient, a family member, a concerned member of the community, we want to hear from you during this conversation. Okay, so Dr. Ijan, first tell us about your professional path. What inspired you to become a doctor in the first place? What was the driving factor that led you to where you are now?
Oh, geez, my life story. So I am an OBGYN, like you said, at South Brooklyn Health, but I finally remember as Coney Island Hospital. I started here in the year 2000, so it's been a while since I've been here. I did grow up in Brooklyn. My family arrived here from abroad, from Turkey, when I was about a year old. And growing up in Brooklyn, back in the 70s, I guess no one had health insurance. We definitely didn't have any money. So we went to the New York City Public Health Clinics that were still there back in the 70s for our medical care. And I remember going to these visits. And I remember how kind they were, I guess, to my family, how they took care of us, how they helped my mom. My mom didn't speak English. Slowly she did learn, but just through all of this, I saw how hard they worked and how they made my family feel so comfortable. And, I mean, growing up, I had the luxury of attending school, went to a great college down in Washington, went to medical school down there at Georgetown. And then I came back to Brooklyn again to be with family and do my residency at Maimonides Hospital. Got a great education there, and like everybody else, wanted to join the medical practice in, this is what booming back then, so I went to the suburbs, and I had a glitch. We had all the amenities, the hospitals were great, there was free parking, but something was missing. Something was missing, something that I remembered from childhood brought me back to Brooklyn again, and it brought me back to Coney Island, and what it was is the need to help people. And when I said that my family got help, what it did was that it made my parents feel comfortable that we were being taken care of, so they didn't have to worry about our health, that they didn't have to worry about their kids being healthy, and they didn't have to worry about paying any money for that. And I think that allowed us and my family to support me in everything else that I did in life. You know, when you don't have to worry about where you're getting your child's vaccinations, where you can take them where they're sick, and where you don't have to empty out your bank account to help people, you can worry about other things like, you know, saving up money and sending your kids to school and saving up. I mean, that's why my family came to this country. So that's how I'm here now. And I love what I do over the world, all different languages, religions, but they all want the same thing. They just want happiness, and they want themselves to be respected and cared for. So. Thank you.
You know, and thank you for that. You know, you mentioned your experience as a child having healthcare and knowing what that was like, and then the calling you were, I'm sure, making way more in the private sector, and you said, you know what, I have to go back to help the people. And that's a huge statement. The question that I ask is, what is the difference at H&H? You know, is it fair to say your colleagues provide healthcare to people who often have trouble getting services anywhere else? Do you see that?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, most people who come to the city hospitals really don't have any resources. You know, right. they don't even know where to go sometimes. So they don't have insurance. I mean, it's gotten better over the years, but they come and they also find people who are like themselves, I think. You know, they see people that work hard and just want to help.
Absolutely. So now getting into this contract, you guys have been really working very hard to get Mayor Adams to update this contract. And it's been a journey. What's the impact of working under an old contract? And when I say, you know, you guys, please forgive me. You know, it's not any disrespect. It's definitely, I just want the listeners to know that I am talking about the entire group, you know, the union, this is the SEIU, Doctors Council. So, you know, if I say, when I said you guys, I mean, I don't mean that with any disrespect, but I want everyone to know that this is a huge group that is moving our city. You know, without your work, without your help, one day New York City would be finished. So please tell us the impact under working under an old contract.
Well, just to let your listeners also know, I mean, the New York Doctors Council has almost 3,000 members. And we take care of people in 11 acute care hospitals and many more public health clinics throughout the city and some long-term care facilities as well throughout the city. So we go from Brooklyn to Staten Island to Queens, I mean, in Manhattan. We're in all the boroughs. And there's a lot of constraints with working for the city. And with the old contract, I mean, when you're working, the big push that we're pushing for is to recruit new doctors and then to keep the doctors and to respect the doctors. Unfortunately, with the old contract and the old salary system that goes along with the old contract, it does very little. Actually, it hurts trying to get new doctors to come work here. The young doctors that graduate medical school now are in debt. I mean, easily $100,000, $200,000, and even more. And when they see the salary system that New York City Health and Hospital works under, they come here wanting jobs, but knowing that they can't take them because otherwise they won't be able to live. And then the doctors that are here can't stay sometimes because they can't do what they need to do with their lives, because they're not getting enough. So the budget restraints, and that's why we're reaching out to Mayor Adams, the budget is really constraining and preventing the hospitals to be employed by the best doctors that we can find.
And then also, you know, and that's a powerful statement. Also, there are spikes in ER visits and admission. And again, I've said this, those spikes could actually be any one of us listening to this interview, you know, because we never know when we will have to go to a New York City hospital or, you know, and things just happen. So can you talk about the fallout from the shortage of specialists and the impact that are we seeing longer wait times, maybe important surgeries? What is happening? What are we seeing because of this shortage?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we're severely understaffed. Psychologists about my department here. In the last, we haven't been able to hire any new general OBGYNs to come work here. We've lost at least 5, count right now, doctors over the same time. Doctors retired, some of them went and left because they found jobs elsewhere. Now, in our department of OBGYNs, the number of deliveries has exploded. I mean, before COVID, we had a good number of deliveries, but since COVID, a year staff department taking care of these patients. So when you say that you can wind up in any ER, any woman pregnant can wind up in any labor room. We've had patients who have their prenatal care anywhere, other states, other countries, and they just wind up here in Brooklyn with an emergency and they come to Coney Island. So you never know where you'll be. And you want doctors that are fully charged and ready to go. but we're having difficult times finding people. The labor room is open 24 hours, 7 days a week. And so there's some doctors in our department that are working 80 to 100 hours a week trying to staff the place, being the labor room and the emergency room. So when it comes to our clinics, we're terribly understaffed there, and the wait time for like a general OBGYN visit, you know, regular annual GYN visit is 3 to 4, 5, 6 months. So everything is affected.
Wow. So, you know, I just want to let everybody know that we are speaking to Dr. Ijan Turkman, OBGYN, a physician at H&H South Brooklyn Health, formerly Coney Island Hospital. And we are definitely covering the Doctors Council SEIU. I would love for you to call in. The number is 212-209-2877. I believe we have a caller on the line.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you so much.
She's not MD, but I want to congratulate Dr. Turkman on her outstanding work speaking up, advocating for the healthcare industry, for SEIU, for the public of New York City who lives or, worst case scenario, dies because of medical care. And your coverage is so important. And again, just to reemphasize, it's not only that healthcare is on the line, the listeners' lives are on the line. And we need to support our frontline doctors, better staffing, respect the healthcare workers, tax the rich, tax the headed moguls. And I do know a few of the brilliant WBAI listeners may think that elections don't make a difference. But your health is on the line. Your lives are on the line. Medicare disadvantage, that scam that's being run in so many areas, Medicare is on the line. The cost of medication and prescription drugs is on the line. So not only is the local union battle important, we need to connect us to the national, with the healthcare workers. The public needs to speak up. Let your voices be heard. And again, I salute the SEIU Doctors Council. Keep on fighting. Keep up the good work for the election. Save democracy. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Response to that, Dr. Turkman? Was there anything you wanted to respond to that?
Oh, I wanted to say thank you so much for understanding and supporting us. I wish more and more people would do that and make an understanding and realize that this is for all of us. You know, the caller was absolutely right. And just want to also say that it's all our lives that are at stake and all our well-being is at stake. And, yeah, everybody needs to go out and vote. So,
okay. Just moving into, you know, we are always moving the conversation for time's sake. I wanted to move into Black maternal health disparities. And I know that it's definitely the 21st century economy of healthcare. And there's always a push to get patients out of the hospital as soon as possible. What can you speak to the issue of Black maternal health disparities and what you're seeing as far as that is concerned?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up because that's an extremely important topic, especially in the city that we have here. We do have a healthcare disparity sometimes, and sometimes it's just something that we don't realize and we have to think about things and bring things to light. And so what we've had, H&H actually has done a good job, and the OBGYN task force also initiated programs to try to find ways to bring to light mitigate, you know, the disparities that are there. So we have a maternal health home evaluated by a social worker because a lot of our patients also have a lot of difficulties at home, not just with healthcare, but with just finding their needs to take care of themselves and the ability to get to the hospital. So that has been helping a lot. And we've also, I mean, most of the doctors, all the doctors and the whole entire team throughout H&H are committed to help anyone regardless of race, regardless of where they came from, and to treat everybody equally and with respect. That's our major goal, is to make sure that anyone who walks through our doors gets everything that they need. And that's where recruitment comes into play as well, is that you need good doctors to stay here. You want the best of the best, because our patients are the sickest of the sickest. So you want really, really educated, sophisticated doctors to take care of the patients that we have here. And unfortunately, I've been here a long time, but now you don't find that anymore. You find young doctors who sometimes do come here, well, not here, but not at Coney, but some of the other hospitals, but then they stay for a couple of years and then they leave. They get their experience. They get all the learning that we can give them, and then they're gone. You know, and they don't want to stay. So just as much as recruitment, retention is a huge issue. So all those efforts, I think, will help us.
And that's important, because basically what you're saying is that we're seeing a revolving door of doctors or health practitioners who are coming and going, and no one is staying. We have to wrap up soon, but I understand that Dr. Michael Katz, the president and CEO of Health and Hospitals, had a town hall for physicians. Can you share what was said, what he said at that town hall?
Yeah, we did. We had a town hall last night, and I want to thank Dr. Katz for spending time with us, and he went even overtime. There was, I think, close to 300 doctors on the call with us last night, if not more. I lost track of it. But he is so supportive of the doctors. He's a doctor himself. He sees patients himself over at Gouverneur Hospital Clinic. And, he does what he can, but there's constraints. And that's when the city and Mayor Adams has to step in. I mean, he definitely wants to reach out, and he's so supportive. He talks to us, and he understands all our issues because he lives them day to day too, but he can't because he's under budget restraints. And he keeps trying to cut up the pie in different ways, but there's only so much pie. And that's where the city and Mayor Adams needs to step in, and the city council, and start funding our hospital system.
What can we do to support the Doctors Council, SEIU? And if this is the first time someone is hearing about this issue, or the, 100th time, what can be done and what can we do to support Doctors Council, SEIU?
Oh, thank you. We could use all the support we can. You can call Mayor Adams. You can call the city council. You can call the governor. I mean, we can, there's a petition going around that's going to be reaching out to Mayor Adams. I can get that website for you. I don't have it offhand, but it is with Doctors Council. And sign petitions. You can come to our hospitals, come look around and talk to us, and maybe, get an understanding of what's going on, but we need all the help that we can, so we'd appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you so much for sharing this information. I hope this was helpful to anyone listening. Again, if this is the first time you're hearing this, or the 100th time, I hope that we all understand how important this information is. Doctors Council, SEIU, Dr. Ijan Turkman, OBGYN, physician at Health and Hospital South Brooklyn Health, formerly Coney Island Hospital. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. And thank you so much for having me, Ms. Glow.
Absolutely. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Peter says, Peter, follow me. unloaded, stretched out his hands and began to pray.
He cried,
help me,
help me, Lord,
help me,
help me,
Lord. I believe I'm going to he spoke up to old Peter, said, Peter, follow me.
And then
old Peter jumped to faith and began to walk.
God knows
he walked out on the water like a ship out on the sea.
And then
old Peter lost his faith and began to sing.
God knows
he stretched out his hands and began to think.
He cried,
help me,
help me, Lord,
help me,
help me,
Lord, I believe I'm going to.
Are listening to WBAI 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio in New York and New Jersey, streaming live online at WBAI.org. I'm Keziah Glow. It's 72 degrees under cloudy and rainy skies in NYC, headed up to 84 degrees later this afternoon. You can expect scattered showers tomorrow and Thursday with temperatures in the low 80s. Friday through when the weekend, it clears up with sun returning with temperatures getting into the high 80s, and rain is not expected until the middle of next week. We Decide America at the Crossroads, Pacifica Radio Network's 2024 campaign coverage. This summer, the Pacifica Radio Network just covered the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. Next month, it's on to the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, August 19th through the 22nd. Live coverage runs from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern each night of both conventions. November 5th, 2024, PRN will also provide live election night coverage. This program and this special national coverage is made possible by sustaining contributions from the American labor movement and listeners like you. Our growing list of sustaining labor sponsors include unions representing close to 2 million rank and file union members and their families, the American Federation of Government Employees, representing 750,000 federal workers in all 50 states, 1199 SIU, the largest union of healthcare workers in the nation, representing 450,000 members, 32BJ SEIU, America's largest building service union, representing more than 175,000 workers in 11 states and Washington, D.C. Transport Workers Union of America, representing 155,000 workers. Communication Workers of America, NJ, representing 70,000 public and private sector workers. The United Steelworkers Local 4200, representing 1,700 nurses at Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital in New Brunswick, New Jersey. The New Jersey's HPAE, representing 14,000 nurses and allied healthcare professionals. New York Metro Area Postal Union, APWU, AFL-CIO, AFSME, DC 37, Local 3621, FDNY EMS officers, New York City Organization of Public Service Retirees. And of course, Mike Quill's Transport Workers of America is also in the house for voter education. Let's play that.
The Transport Workers Union fights the bosses for our 155,000 members across the economic spectrum. Airlines, mass transit, rail, school buses, bike share, tourism, university and utilities, even Central Park horse carriage drivers. I'm John Samuelson, International President of the Transport Workers Union. If you want a strong voice at the workplace, if you want to improve your life, join us. We are the TWU, America's Fight Back Union.
Wonderful. Okay, so now let's get into this. Earlier this month, the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection approved the permit for the construction of a backup power plant for the Passaic Valley Sewerage Commission in the Ironbound section of Newark, a community already home to multiple pollution-producing power plants. Public health experts have warned Ironbound residents already experience high level of pollution from numerous sources, including an incinerator, power plants, heavy industry, Newark Airport, truck and train traffic, and major highway. A broad coalition of local community groups, as well as social justice and environmental groups, have been fighting this plant for a long time. Even elected officials have joined in the fight, yet the state's environmental regulator has signed off on the controversial project. For the latest, we are going to go to Maria Lopez, the Deputy Director of Organizing and Advocacy for Newark's Ironbound Community Corporation. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, wonderful. So it's wonderful that you're here, but the situation is not wonderful. And, you know, we want to get into this. This is for many people who are, we were talking about this morning. This is the area on the turnpike or I-95 where you're driving and automatically you get this very intense smell. And it's, you know, you want to roll your windows up and you're wondering where this is coming from. That is actually a community. And so I would like to start on what's the rationale for this plant? What is the reasoning for this? Go ahead.
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, in the Ironbound, you know, just to context that here, we have three power plants and we're surrounded by the longest Superfund site in the country, which is where we produced Agent Orange, right? During the Vietnam War, we were dumping the byproduct dioxin, which is cancer causing, into the river. So our community is no stranger to toxic pollution. And so, you know, of course, there's toxic pollution, legacy pollution. And then in the times of climate change, all of that gets mingled. You know, I always say, like, yes, we're all worried that we're going to flood out. But some of us live in communities that are surrounded by sewage and toxic waste. So when we flood, those floodwaters are toxic. So during Sandy, what had happened is our sewage treatment facility, which serves 48 different municipalities and 12 different states, it did get backed up and it did flood because there was a power outage. It lasted less than 24 hours. But here we are, almost 12 years later, fighting because the sewage treatment facility, instead of deciding to, you know, clean up their act in other ways, decided to build up a backup power plant so that they would never lose power again. I think it's pretty crazy, but that's the proposition that's been on the table, is to put a backup power plant so that the sludge facility does not lose power and, you know, waste does not go into the river, which from an environmental perspective, I can understand. But from an environmental justice perspective, we don't deserve four power plants in our neighborhood.
Absolutely. Number one, I want to thank you for doing this work and bringing this to the attention of everyone, because, you know, this underneath the rug, during the Superstorm Sandy, when that hit the Passaic Valley sewer plant, the waste actually went into the water that and it went into people's basements and it was flooding people's basements. So we do understand the need for this backup power plant. You know, can you explain or go into further detail as to, you know, what happened during that time so you can paint a picture for us?
Of course. I mean, look, sewage in the floodwater was the least of our worries. We have even worse contaminants that we're surrounded by. Our neighborhood was flooded out. A lot of residents lost power for much longer than the sewage treatment facility. I want to be clear. Because we're surrounded by such what's called critical infrastructure, like the sewage plant or the port or the airport, they get their power turned on first, right? There was residents during Sandy that lost power for almost a month, right? 6 weeks before they fixed the infrastructure around their homes so that they could have access to regular power again. So, of course, we understand the need for a backup source of power. When this power plant was proposed, it was 10 years ago. You know, in terms of battery and solar technology, we were dinosaur years away from where we are today, right? Like, the technology has improved substantially such that they could replace this, what would be a fracked gas power plant, with a renewable source of backup power generation. And that's what our community's been fighting for, is don't go the fossil fuel route. You know, don't be a dinosaur. Let's step into the future and have a renewable source of backup generation, one that does not contribute to the climate change you're fighting.
Okay, so basically, you're not saying that this backup is not needed. It is needed. And it has to be close to, in proximity to, the original, right? So basically, the alternative that you're saying is the way that it's fueled. Is that?
Absolutely.
Is that
okay. You know, there's natural gas is actually the worst form of backup power, because you can have natural gas lines interrupted by disaster. So it doesn't even make sense to me that you would, with the least recommended form of power generation by FEMA, who's in charge of disasters. And even in our own state, we saw many natural gas line pipelines fail. So this doesn't make sense at all from a community perspective, where we've been so overburdened already by power plants. We want them to, you know, invest the time and energy. We've already waited 10 years. And also, I want to be clear, the sewage treatment facility had never lost power again. You know, we had Hurricane Superstorm Henry and Superstorm Ida. They were within a week of each other. They were both record-breaking storms that happened a week back-to-back, right? So that means that the water table was full. And the power plant, the sewage treatment facility did just fine, because they've been implementing other remediation methods, right? So it shows you don't need to build your vanity power plant in your backyard to be safe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And just one question I wanted to get into. Who is in the Iron Brown community? I want to expand on that, because I want to make it clear who lives there. Who is this actually affecting?
Yeah, I think there's a reason that people don't think of Newark, right? As you're driving by, Newark's a predominantly Black city. Ironbound is a city full of immigrants, undocumented folks. We're Black and brown. We are low-income folks. And so, you know, I'll never forget, a few years ago, our incinerator was burning purple. And we had major news outlets coming to report, but they were reporting on the people on the turnpike who were just driving by us on their way home, worried about their health. You know, not worried about the health of our community, when we have a school that you can walk from the public school, the elementary school, to both where the power plant's going to be, to where the incinerator is, to where the sewage treatment facility is. The kids in our neighborhood have a higher rate of asthma than anywhere else in the state. 1 out of 4 kids has asthma. And so when I think of the governor doing this, I think of the continuation of environmental racism. He recently canceled a power plant proposal that was right across the river, but it was in a low-income white neighborhood. And the reasons given for that was because the grid, right, the surrounding power generating sources, that they've been upgraded so that they, you know, the governor decided we don't need that power plant. So why do we not need that power plant, but we do need one that's in a Black and brown community?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And just to say the least, you know, just a reminder, this area is being affected by an incinerator, power plants, heavy industry, Newark Airport, truck and train traffic, and a major highway. So there's so many different things that are happening. And you said that many of the students, the young people, have high rates of asthma, which also they don't go to school. They have high rates of absenteeism due to the illness that they're having. So they have high rates of missing school. Are there anything else that we're seeing that is, also it was said that there are a lot of people died during COVID because of the comorbidities.
I couldn't get that one out.
Sorry.
Exactly.
But you know what I mean? Basically, there were so many deaths in that area during COVID because there are so many different other issues that people are having. Can you speak to that as well?
Of course, the comorbidity in our neighborhood was devastating during COVID. And that's because, when you breathe in toxic air, and I want to remind the listeners that it's lead, it's arsenic, it's dioxin, it's mercury, all of that is present in our air. And all of that would come out of a smokestack of a backup power generating plant. So when you think about all those things in our air and forget about what's in our water and what's in the surrounding contaminated land, and we've done this intentionally, it's not an act of nature, right? We've decided to zone places like Newark in the state of New Jersey. When you look at the zoning, heavy industrial zoning is only in black and brown neighborhoods. You know, we have one of the highest rates of, pollution segregation. So even though it's a heavy industrial state, you can see that as the concentration of black and brown folks goes up, the concentration of pollution goes up. And that is not an accident. That's a history of redlining. So then when you get something like COVID, a neighborhood like ours was vulnerable to begin with. We also had most of our community working essential jobs. Our community was breathing in toxic air that already gave them pre-existing heart disease, besides the asthma and other respiratory diseases. So it made us, very vulnerable, and we definitely felt in our neighborhood. We had one of the highest death rates in our area.
We're moving on time. I want to get into the Passaic Valley Sewage Commission and, who is making these decisions? Who is behind this actual decision? Because, of course, there are people from the community, elected officials are behind it. But tell us a little bit more about the Passaic Valley Sewage Commission.
I want to be clear. The Newark elected officials are not behind this project. We've actually had great support from our mayor, from our city council, from, our Senator Ruiz, Majority Leader, from our assemblywomen, from Assemblywoman Spate, Assemblywoman Pinter Marin. They've been amazing in their vocal opposition of this project for all the reasons we've given. But what's horrifying to me is that unelected, appointed political bureaucrats get to make this decision mm-hmm. at the end of the day. They get this to decide to spend $180 million on dinosaur technology instead of investing in a future that's renewable where we can have a win-win situation. It's on the table. It's just a matter of breaking a contract. And they're clearly putting money over the health of the people of the Ironbound and the people of Newark. And I want to be clear, it doesn't just affect Ironbound. It affects all surrounding communities, even if the plant is just located in Ironbound.
Now, it was said that Governor Christie fired six of the agency's commissioners, and they found a lot of nepotism. There was a lot happening within the commission. Can you tell us a little bit about that as well?
I mean, I have no reason to believe that that's not true again, that is just valuing money that must be getting something on the side. Because when you think about the amount of the hundreds of people that have come, right, we've had multiple marches to their site. We've had thousands of people come out and have vocal opposition on the public meetings of the commissioners. And then we've had every single elected official say no, but this commission says no, yes, this plan more than 10 years ago, and the technology is outdated. We're spending $180 million on the least recommended form of backup generation, a dangerous form of backup generation. Methane gas blows up in emergencies. And I can't help but think it's probably time for inner dealings again.
Mm-hmm. And then do you think the federal government step in at this point? Because if the elected officials are behind this. And when I said they were behind it earlier, I meant they're behind you guys. Like they're not in conjunction. Yeah.
Exactly. They're,
so what can, do you think the federal government can actually step in?
Yeah, no, the federal government should step in. I mean, EPA should ultimately step in with this permit because it is a Title VI violation. It's a civil rights violation to live in a neighborhood that's only 4 square miles and has this level of concentration in our state, which, you know, our governor has flown across the country touting his environmental justice record, but he's tarnishing it beyond repair with this power plant in a community that is the poster child for environmental racism. So to add another power plant when there are alternatives, I understand if there was no other option, but we know that there are other options. They just cost a little bit of money and time. And we've already wasted enough time on this dinosaur proposal.
Okay. And last question, what can we do as listeners to support this situation and to lend our support? What can we do?
Yeah, and that's why thank you so much for having, you know, not just me, but when I come, it's the voice of our community being uplifted, and I appreciate that. I need everyone who cares about environmental justice, who just cares about where public money, tax money is being spent, to call the commissioners. And you know what, while you're at it, call our Essex County Joseph DeVincenzo. He's very important and a key player here. He's the only one that has not taken a stand. I know that if he took a stand, this power plant would be over. We need this power plant shut down. We can't have the voice of people we actually elected into office be overridden in this way, especially when they're black and brown legislators. To be ignored in this way, I think sends a chilling message to communities across the state and across the country.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are many communities that have dealt with this. I know the South Bronx was one of those areas, and there were many factories within the community, and elected officials, as you said, had to step in and begin to rezone these communities. So this is something that is very important, and, you know, it affects the lives of everyone living there. I thank you so much for joining us. I don't know if we had any callers who called in during this time, but I thank you so much for joining us and bringing this information to us. Maria Lopez Nunez, Deputy Director for Organizing and Advocacy for the Ironbound Community Corporation. Is there anything that you would like to just share in closing?
No, thank you. Thank you to all your listeners. And Ironbound, we've been blessed by the amount of people who have come out that don't live in our neighborhood. And when we stick together and we can win this power plant, they would have had it built years ago. But we've been resisting. And I really believe in the bottom of my heart, we can stop this thing.
Okay. Thank you so much. And again, you know, if you have ever been traveling and smelled that smell, you will understand how serious this is to actually constantly live in an environment where you are smelling this. Thank you so much for sharing this information. All right. This is Keziah Glow, and you have been listening to the Tuesday edition of What's Going On. I'm so blessed and happy to share this information and be in this space with you. I thank you so much. Michael G. Haskins, an amazing audio engineer, and Robert Bob Hennelly for all the great work that you are doing and the executive producing of this show. Linda Sazor is in this space tomorrow. Democracy Now! Is up next, and I'm out. Keziah Glow.
Of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Who are people gonna rise up and get their share? Who are people gonna rise up, take what's there? Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, run, run.
We're in a unique moment here. It's a moment where we have a chance to actually demonstrate our power.
Imhotep Gary Bird heard on WBAI Friday evenings from 7 to 9 p.m.
I learned from Dr. Walter Fauntroy, who fought with Dr. King in the Civil Rights Movement, that there were five areas that they identified that they felt politics could control and hit. It was health, housing, education, economics, and social justice. The fact is, WBAI is a nexus for the progressive community to make those changes in all of those areas and has been decade after decade. I say to you again, whose station?
Our station.
Whose control?
Our control.
Long live WBAI.
This is listener-sponsored, locally controlled WBAI New York.
This is the mic check for Cat Radio Cafe.
Testing. Tune in to Cat Radio Cafe Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
This place playwright on Tuesday, July 23rd at 9 p.m. We'll be joined by critically acclaimed comics creator Lucy Nisley to discuss her new graphic novel, Whoa, A House Cat Story of Despair, starring the super fluffy and hyper-dramatic cat, Linny.
Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
Cat Radio Cafe.
Hey, do cats drink coffee?
When their human is too damn busy reading comics about another cat.
Just as I thought.
This is AI New York. Stay strong and keep listening.
WBAI, strong and keep listening. Keep listening. Well, what you've heard over the past hour and certain night, there's so much going on in the overnight. You hear some incredible live shows and some rebroadcasts, some encore performances, and you heard that earlier this morning. And I am proud of this radio station. I'm proud of the direction that we are going now. And I am glad to be along for that ride and glad that you are on with us. Thank you for joining us. Make sure to visit our website, WBAI.org. Of course, you know I'm going to ask you to visit the website and become a member of the station, a financial supporter of the station. But even more than that, to look at our website and find out what programs are on at what time. That is important. So you know that your favorite program is not perpetually going to be preempted, but is going to be there Wednesday, let's say, at 11 a.m. or at 10 a.m. or at 7 a.m. or at 7 p.m. Your favorite program is going to be there. So visit the website WBAI.org for that information. Coming up,